Morning. It's Friday, February 14th. Happy Valentine's Day. You've tuned in to North Idaho News of the Week here on 88.5 KRFY. This is Panhandle Community Radio. I'm Jack Peterson, joined this morning by Will Love as my co-host. Good morning.
Good morning. When you asked and I saw it was Valentine's Day, I figured with the last name, I had to come back. So anyway, happy Valentine's Day to you two, and then also happy Valentine's Day to my darling wife, Debbie.
Well, what a Valentine's Day it must be for her to be able to listen to you on the radio deliver the news. The third voice on the microphone this morning is Zach Hagedon from the Sandpoint Reader, the editor-in-chief. Good morning, Zach.
Good morning, Jack. Good morning, Will. Good morning. Happy Valentine's Day. Yeah. I should probably send a greeting to my wife as well, although I know she's not listening. So just let her know. If somebody sees her around town, tell her that I said Happy Valentine's Day on the radio.
You were thinking about her. Yeah, that's important. Happy Valentine's Day to those listening in my household as well. Let's get right to it, I suppose. In state news, the House has passed Bill 93, the school choice tax credit bill, a $50 million bill that passed, I think it passed 42-28. The bill would allow for parents to receive up to $5,000 per K-12 student to be used for qualified educational expenses, which could include private school tuition. Priority would be given in the first year to households earning at or below 300% of the federal poverty level, and in the following years, priority would be given to families that previously had the credit. This bill now advances to the Senate. In county news, the Bonner County Commissioners met briefly on Tuesday, but the meeting was cut short by a special emergency meeting. Commissioners tabled their action items to approve the sheriff's office and county and fair purchases after commissioners expressed some concern about possibly losing an amount in the tens of thousands of dollars if they did not act quickly in executive session, and then proceeded to that executive session, which are closed to the public. So we don't know exactly what they were talking about. Yet we may never know, but of course the reporters, including those from the Sandpoint Reader, are hot on the case, I'm sure, and we may find out someday soon. That's kind of old news. The other big item in the Sandpoint Reader this week is about libraries. The headline: Politics Royal Regional Library Districts. Kootenai County has curtailed their access under Idaho's Harmful to Minors Library Materials Law, which breaks a 30-member library consortium that has not been, I guess, the 30-member consortium is not something that gets a lot of headlines. It's never really made the news before, so people may not be aware of it. But this piece in the Sandpoint Reader is written by Zach Hagedon, and you've kind of got the scoop on it. I guess, you know, maybe that's as good a place as any to start our conversation is with this library bill. It's not a library bill. The library bill passed last year. It's a library lawsuit that started it down in, I think, in Meridian, the Donnelly Library, and then the actions at the in the Kootenai County Library System that are causing concern with our local libraries up here because they're related through the what is currently called the the Inland Northwest Libraries.
Right.
Yeah. I guess let's talk about it. This story started with the lawsuit, which I think we mentioned last week, but there is now a lawsuit. The Donnelly County or the Donnelly Library has filed suit against the state because they have been impacted by the passage of that the harmful materials bill that passed last year, and they have had to basically close their they say that they've had to close their doors to all minors because their library is so small that they couldn't have an adults-only section, and that has impacted their viability as a library, and so they have filed suit. Up here, our libraries are not joining that lawsuit, but the East Bonner County and the West Bonner County Library Districts are not joining, but they're planning to file letters of support. Is that about right?
Well, West Bonner is planning to file a letter of support. I don't have any indication from East Bonner if they're going to do that or not.
Okay.
But I guess, you know, to kind of frame it a little bit more for people who might not remember, last year, as you mentioned, Jack, there was House Bill 710, and it made it through the legislature after several years of trying to get something similar passed. This bill returned over and over again in several legislative sessions in various forms. And it got defeated for various reasons. At one point, Governor Brad Little even referred to this kind of legislation as, you know, a library bounty, mm-hmm. which, you know, he said he would oppose, he would veto. And HB 710 came through, and he finally sort of signed it, almost out of frustration, because he knew they were going to bring it back again and again and again. And he also knew that they could override his veto.
Yeah.
So this bill got passed even despite sort of the objections of Brad Little himself. And what it does is as statute, which it turned into a law in July last year. So as statute, what it does is it gives parents and guardians the ability to sue libraries if they can prove that their children, minor children, were able to access any kind of materials that fit under this definition in the law of being harmful to minors. And that includes, you know, prurient material, you know, like they always say pornography, you know, although we all know that there's no pornography in the libraries, but it can be interpreted to include anything that involves like LGBTQ content. You know, it's really just kind of a whole suite of things that sort of the conservative hard right of the legislature doesn't like. And now there's a legal mechanism in that statute where you can sue the library. So what libraries have done in response to this is try to beef up sort of their protocols and policies to make sure that that material, even if it can be interpreted as such, being harmful, is removed from accessibility for minors. And that in some libraries has resulted in adults-only rooms where they pull their collections, and then anything they think might be challenged under the law gets put in this special area where you have to be 18 or older to get into it. Whereas in Donnelly, like you mentioned, Jack, their library is too small. They weren't able to do anything to make sure that minors wouldn't be able to get like 50 Shades of Grey or something like that. Mm-hmm. So they had to make it into an adults only. That therefore they could show they had damages. Therefore they could join this lawsuit. Our libraries have not had any of these issues yet.
Yeah.
So I was told, you know, that there's no damages to show, so they can't mm-hmm. join the lawsuit. So that's one part of the story. The other part of the story, as you alluded to, was the consortium. Mm-hmm. This 30-member library consortium, which, again, I had never heard of either. Apparently, it's been around since 1984. But as I said to Megan Mize, I think I'm pronouncing her last name correctly, out in West Bonner, she's the library mm-hmm. director out there. And she also happens to be the director of the governing board for this consortium. But as I mentioned to her, I was like, I'd never heard of this. And she says, well, you know, we've been just kind of working in the background. I said, well, you've obviously been doing a good job, because I don't hear about things unless they're not working. But the fact that I've heard about it now and that we've all heard about it means that it's not working.
Well, and it's a group of libraries that agree to share materials with right. each other. It's not something that you'd necessarily ever see a headline about.
No.
Yeah.
And it's a big, big mm-hmm. area that they're sort of all in this sort of group together with. Yeah. I mean, it's all the way from Priest River, basically down to Moscow. And it's all the different library districts from like Benoit, Shoshone, even over into Eastern Washington. A lot of these are tiny little rural libraries that probably wouldn't have the ability to have their own sort of collections and catalog, you know, software stuff. So they're resource sharing. And then, of course, they're also sort of functionally able to share material across, you know, big distances that maybe like a tiny library in Tenset or Plummer or something wouldn't be able to get. They can get it from, you know, Coeur d'Alene or Priest River.
Which is a pretty regular
right
process within the library industry, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is not unusual. Yeah. And it's not unique to Idaho either. But within the consortium, of course, the biggest single group is Kootenai County. And they have the Community Library Network, which is what they call their district. And that includes a number of libraries, Post Falls, Coeur d'Alene, you know, in that whole sort of Coeur d'Alene area. And they have had a board change in recent years. This might sound familiar to people who watch things like North Idaho College, West Bonner County School District. Their library board became very hard right conservative in recent years. And as we've seen in other places, that board has now taken pretty dramatic steps to sort of institute their political opinions and agendas into the institution. And the surprise move that the Coeur d'Alene Library Network, the CLN, pulled on, I think it was January 16th, the day after the consortium met, the CLN took it upon itself to institute this really hardcore policy about we're not going to allow minors' library cards to even be used outside of CLN. We're not going to allow them to access a huge range of materials. We're going to pull 140 titles off the stacks and review them for compliance under the law. And we're, you know, basically they sort of went rogue. they in all but name pulled out of the consortium, made themselves not really their library is not really functional within the consortium. So if you were a person in Blanchard or something or Priest River, your library card would have worked at the Coeur d'Alene libraries just like it would at your home library because they're part of the consortium. Well, now CLN has instituted a whole range of policies that don't match up with the rest of the libraries in the group. So you may well not be able to use your card as you would at your home library. And even more so, people who have CLN library cards can't go to Priest River or whatever. Their cards won't even work. So this has caused a lot of frustration, especially among, you know, Megan Mize out in West Bonner, because she's the head of the governing board for the consortium. So they're all kind of trying to scramble and figure out how they're gonna manage this. And they have a meeting coming up next Wednesday, where it sounded like to me anyway that they might even decide to not have the CLN in the consortium anymore. They may be pulled out entirely.
So going back to this law, I mean, did it include any standards on how, like, these decisions are made on what books are appropriate and what books need to be in this adult-only section?
It was pretty well laid on the library districts themselves. And, you know, the law itself is, it's kind of ironic because the law is very clear that anything that excites the prurient interest is not appropriate. And if you read the text of the law, it's very graphic. So the law itself could be read, you know, in such a way that it excites the prurient interest. Mm-hmm. So
the law wouldn't be appropriate in the library.
I mean, a case could be made, honestly. And I hesitate to even say some of the words that are in the law on the radio because it doesn't feel appropriate. This is part of the reason why this has been so controversial is because the definitions and the powers entrusted to the library districts for determining these kinds of like appropriateness levels are so subjective and so broad that this is why there's the challenge. And we knew it was going to happen. I mean, nobody's surprised that there's a lawsuit. There's actually two lawsuits. There was one that came before this one with Donnelly Library, and some of the national publishing houses like Penguin Random House, and some parents and students have also joined the lawsuit. But prior to this one that we're talking about was another one that was aimed at sort of private libraries, because this law doesn't only apply to, you know, public libraries, you know, school libraries. It's any library where minors have access to stuff. And I think a lot of these library districts and these boards are aware of how broad and difficult this is to manage. to the degree where, you know, CLN, the Community Library Network's own lawyer, Colton Boyles, who people around here might be familiar with from such things as, you know, Janice McGeehan's lawsuits. And Colton's kind of the celebrity sort of right-wing lawyer. He was the NIC lawyer and all these things. Even he warned CLN that they were taking on significantly more liability, even than the law itself, by taking the steps they took, you know, in mid-January. But they said they didn't care. The political and social prerogative, I guess, that they felt they had outweighed, you know, their risk of lawsuit. So this is definitely the beginning of a long line of litigation, I'm sure.
Now, I thought an interesting point that you had in the article, or what was brought up, was the idea that, I don't know, almost like it may not be about books, but right, more about the idea of, hey, let's destroy these taxing districts. Right. Am I reading that right?
Yes. Well, when I spoke with Megan out in West Bonner, I should clarify also that East Bonner County Library is not part of the consortium, nor is Boundary County. So West Bonner is part of this consortium, and we all know what happened in West Bonner with the school district, where, you know, Brandon Durst was sort of installed there by a board of trustees that were very right wing, very conservative. Durst, of course, being a well known sort of conservative activist. And to a lot of observers, including Megan Mize, the playbook, as she put it, quote unquote, was to come in from sort of out of the area. Brandon Durst is not from around here. He was affiliated with the Idaho Freedom Foundation and sort of other statewide and even national conservative activist groups, was to come in, cause chaos, dismantle budgets, you know, sort of make life impossible for a taxing district to exist, and then sort of convert it into some kind of privatized entity, you know, some kind of private school, some kind of private library, whatever you may have. And so Megan connects these dots herself. I mean, I didn't write this.
Right.
She said this, was that it's the same thing that's going on in, you know, Community Library Network, as went on with West Bonner, was, you know, a bunch of right-wing, sort of out-of-state, out-of-area folks came in with the express purpose of dismantling the functioning of this institution, to the point where, you know, eventually, I guess, you just close it down, and then either you don't have a public library or you have, you know, a private library of some kind. I don't even know what that looks like. So she sees an ideological undercurrent that, you know, I think other observers may well connect those dots as well. I mean, we this is not the first time we've seen, you know, a group of governing bodies come together and start, you know, sort of taking things apart. I mean, move fast and break things. I mean, we're seeing it at the national level. So, I mean, that's her perspective. I would hazard to editorialize.
Are you aware of anybody actually trying to pursue this law, try to get their $250 out of any given library district because their child got a book that they didn't want them to have?
It's been interesting to watch because this law actually hasn't been leveraged
right
in the way that I think maybe a lot of people thought, feared, and also wanted to see. And it just didn't make it into the piece, but it was kind of a side conversation I had with Megan where she was telling me about this group down in Meridian, which is, you know, outside Boise, Moms for Liberty. And it's a group, you know, that is, you know, very conservative and very concerned with sort of like protecting minors from untoward thoughts and things. And apparently just in the past couple of weeks, representatives from Moms for Liberty have gotten really angry at some of the lawmakers, saying like, look, we got this law passed. The whole point of this was so that we could challenge these books and get them out of the libraries, but nobody's doing it. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's too hard to do. The challenge document is 18 pages long, and you know, we need to step this up and, you know, start actually using this law. And so what they have been doing, and I need to look into this further, but according to Megan, what they've been doing is members of this group have been sending their own kids into libraries in the Meridian area and Boise area specifically to get books that they think are inappropriate to prove like this, you know, look, my children can access this book and it's not appropriate. I'm going to challenge it. So there's some frustration, I think, even on the side of the people who really like this law, that it isn't being used to, you know, challenge libraries to, you know, to bring them to heel or whatever. And even here, I mean, I asked Meg, I was like, have you had any challenges? And the West Bonner County Library is going to turn 100 years old next year. and they have had two challenges in their entire history, neither of which have happened under this law. Mm-hmm. I think the most recent one was, I forget what she told me, it was like 10 years ago or something, 15 years ago. And it was somebody who actually didn't like a book about Lewis and Clark. Because it had some racially insensitive terms in it. But the library ultimately determined that it was historically of its time. And, you know, yeah, take it for what it is. And they didn't remove it. The other challenge was somebody said that a book shouldn't be classified as juvenile fiction. It should be young adult, or maybe it was the other way around. And after some research, you know, they decided that it belonged where it was. So, yeah, I mean, we haven't had challenges up here. I mean, we've had protests and things. Boundary County has had a lot more than we have. I mean, they chased their library director out of the district. Mm-hmm. And that was even before this law. I mean, that was like in 2022. And that whole fracas up there, which was about these issues, about like inappropriate books, you know, books that are not religiously, you know, in line with sort of the conservative right-wing view, that have, you know, sort of racial and gender issues that they don't like. They raised such a huge ruckus up there that it even got on like the John Oliver show. Mm-hmm. I think. So yeah, I mean, that in Boundary County is much more prevalent here, not so much.
Do I read correctly that like the East Bonner County, I remember talking to at the time the interim library director, now she's the director, Vanessa Velez. They were trying to figure out how they were going to respond to the law, and it looks like they haven't made any changes at all. They have not. They've not. If you've been in the library, you know there's no adults only room. Have they moved any materials? Is there a shelf or anything? Or they're just,
according to what Vanessa's told me over the several times we've talked about this, they don't have any plans to preemptively do anything. Because they, I mean, the stance of the East Bonner Library, as among many other libraries, is that they, it's not their job to sort of apply these subjective criteria. It's the parents or the guardians. I mean, this is in loco parentis, right? I mean, they don't want to be serving as the arbiters of what may or may not be appropriate for people. That's up to the individuals who are using the library. So, no, the East Bonner County Library, as far as I'm aware, has made no steps to get ahead of the law because they haven't been challenged under it. And I suppose they would probably address it if they did get a challenge, which is not to say that, you know, we're inviting people to do that. But yeah, I mean, I think they've taken a pretty strong stance that they're not going to move an inch until they have to.
Can you summarize like the impact it would have on resident John Jones? That is like, okay, What does this mean to me? Like, am I being affected by this adult in the community? Like, how might they see some of these things that are, that you brought up in your story?
Right. So I think there's, well, for one thing, these are all taxing districts. So we're all paying for this resource, to be available to everybody. I mean, this is one of the like great public goods that we have in the country is we all pay money to support these library districts to make information and resources available to people for free, you know, quote unquote. I mean, somebody pays for it at some point, but you can access the place anytime you know, that it's open. Go in there, use the internet, get a book, get a movie, get a, you know, listen to music, like whatever you want. If we start seeing libraries having to act as gatekeepers on sort of a subjective moral ground, then the money that we're putting into these systems is not going to the broadest possible use, I guess. That might be sort of the ideological kind of perspective about how it might affect you. And then there's just the idea of, you know, maintaining parents' rights, guardians' rights to make determinations for themselves. I mean, we're big on that in this state. I mean, we were talking about school choice earlier. You know, parents' rights is a major philosophical tenet of a lot of people in Idaho, whether they be right or left wing, it doesn't matter. And to remove the ability for a parent or a guardian to make that determination for themselves, and that the library structurally is making that determination, is a chilling, kind of has a chilling effect on people's access to information, which we're still paying for. So, yeah, I mean, and if you look at like on the ground, what this would look like, an adults only room. And again, this didn't really get into the piece that much. I mean, it was sort of hinted at, but we'll probably follow this up after the meeting on Wednesday next week. But the structural way that this works is you go to a room in the library, which has, you know, the dirty books, quote unquote. And there has to be some kind of system where your ID is checked. There has to be some kind of like logging mechanism where it's like it's recorded that you've gone in here. There could be cameras, you know, to show that minors aren't getting in. So you're suddenly being surveilled at the library for accessing books, you know, that are bad. And then there's a sort of stigmatization that occurs like that. I mean, a quote that Megan gave me, I wish I could have got in here. I didn't, was it makes you feel like you're, you know, some like person going into like a porn shop in the 90s, you know, like you have to sneak in there with your brown bag and get your book. Mm-hmm. And then everybody's watching, you know, like, oh, there's somebody's going into the dirty book area. You know, it's like, that's not how the library is supposed to function, according to, you know, people who would oppose, you know, this law. And so, I mean, I don't want to feel that way when I go to the library. I want to be able to get the book I want to get, you know, and like be on my way. I don't want to have to go plug in some kind of like key code, show my ID, you know, get taken on camera. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think that a lot of people would feel pretty uncomfortable with that if that was the way that the library operated.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned earlier that I can't remember the name of the group, but like it actually, it occurs to me that it would actually be pretty hard to, I'm not surprised that there hasn't been a rash of people, you know, suing their library district for the $250 because of the way of you would ever in the real world get that is probably a parent sending their kid in looking for one of these titles, because otherwise the parent has to go and find it themselves and, you know, check it out themselves, and that's not a problem.
Well,
and under the current law,
and it was, as it was put to me in interviews, you know, it's like kids aren't the ones checking out these books anyway. Mm-hmm. Like these books about puberty and sex and stuff like that. I mean, it's parents who are checking these books out to, you know, sort of like get an idea of how to talk to their kids. You know, well, kids aren't going to the library trying to find smut, right? Mm-hmm. They're going to get books they want to read. So it also kind of begs the question, and this is me just sort of editorializing or speculating, is I honestly wonder how popular this law even is. I wonder if there really is like this huge groundswell of people in Idaho who are so concerned about inappropriate materials in libraries, like wringing their hands, you know, at night thinking, oh my God, my kids are going to go look at some art book with naked people in it. You know, I have a sense that because we haven't seen such dramatic, huge action under this law at libraries around the state, is that it really was a boutique sort of niche issue for the extreme right wing. And they did this as a culture war thing. And the average citizen in Idaho is not concerned about this, which is why we're not seeing a lot of challenges come in. And if they do come in, it's probably going to be as part of a concerted campaign, such as that Moms for Liberty thing. I mean, there already are policies and procedures in place at all these libraries for challenging books. I mean, that was never the case that you couldn't challenge a book. Mm-hmm. And it was never the case that the libraries weren't going to consider your challenge. So this really, I mean, the law didn't change anything. It was a solution in search of a problem, according to a lot of observers, and really just created more problems, which we're seeing now is kind of play out in the law courts.
Do you have a gauge on, like, from both sides, like what the outside interests are in kind of this? I mean, is Idaho the battleground for these national organizations to kind of fight this out?
Yeah, I mean, that gets into a much broader discussion, and I tend to agree that over the years, you know, I've heard Idaho described as the test kitchen for sort of the fringe radical right-wing legislation. A lot of national groups on any number of issues, from, you know, sort of abortion, reproductive rights, to, you know, school choice, to libraries, and I mean any of these suite of issues that are sort of like the bugaboos and the hobby horses of the moral panic side of politics, look at Idaho and they say, well, this is a great place to try these things out because we know there's a super, super majority of Republicans in the legislature. We know that they're extremely right wing, just generally. We know that there's a governor there who is fairly amenable to just letting these things kind of go by if he doesn't feel like he can win the fight. So why not float it up in Idaho and see what happens? The transgender sports bill that we had here a couple years back with Barbara Ehart, I don't know how you say her name, but Barbara Ehart, her transgender in sports bill became the template for the national bills, mm-hmm. which became sort of the template for President Trump's big push that he's done in the last week or so. So we do stick these things sometimes in Idaho, and they do become sort of the standard that other states use. And I think that maybe this might be one of those, you know, this library bill, this library law might be another example of that, where some outside group just wants to see if they can stick a policy somewhere, plant a flag so that it can then be sort of spread from state to state to state. But again, I mean, because we haven't seen people really use it, I don't think people in Idaho really are concerned about this issue.
You remind me of this year, the House Memorial 1, the first thing that the House passed was they want to send a letter to the Supreme Court asking them to reverse the decision
right.
in Obergefell.
Well, and I will also editorialize for a moment because that's fun. I will editorialize that this particular session is unique in that we have a president in the White House who a lot of these people in our legislature want to be noticed by him. And I mean, I can tell you just from my own email inbox, every day I get at least one or two press releases from our U.S. Congress members, not announcing anything they've done, just announcing that they applaud something that Donald Trump has done. And there is this mad dash among lawmakers from the federal level down to the state level to do things to get noticed by the White House, to maybe show up in a press release, to maybe get invited to go stand in front of the cameras, to maybe get offered a job. And so there's a lot of grandstanding and hot dogging going on this session in particular. And I think our dear former District 1 House member, Heather Scott of Blanchard, no longer our House member, but just south of here. Now, she's been really digging into this. Like, she's been trying to make some headlines. I mean, she got into the New York Times, which I'm sure was her point all along, talking about what kind of flags you can fly, you know, talking about overturning, you know, same-sex marriage. I mean, these are not kitchen table issues for most Idahoans, but they are issues that get into press releases and tweets and stuff like that from the kinds of people they want to be retweeted by.
Well, and now speaking of the legislature, I forgot to mention House Bill 93, which is that school choice bill. That did pass the House. It passed 42-28, and among the ayes were our state representative Cornell Razor. Among the nays were our state representative Mark Sauter. And actually, you've seen them differ on, I think, at least two of the on a few of the big bills that have actually come before the full House
right.
so far. So, some differences in our. In the points of view of our congressional delegation from up here in District 1.
Right. And in this particular issue of the paper, you'll find a piece by Jim Woodward,
our
District 1 senator, who, you know, addresses this school choice issue. And his point, I think, kind of feeds into what we were just sort of talking about, was his question about the school choice legislation is like, who's pushing this? And he points to a lot of out-of-state interests. And this has been a kind of a theme of what he's written for us over the past couple times is it seems like Woodward is very concerned that we're legislating based on outside influences and trying to pass bills that really probably don't have much to do with Idaho, but have more to do with a sort of wider agenda. And he questions that. And I mean, he's a Republican. So, I mean, this shows you the variations in the delegation. I think it's good to have a delegation that doesn't entirely agree with each other, but
right. Well, and ultimately it's like, hey, here's $50 million up for grabs.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, people stand to benefit. I mean, this is not just like some chump change, you know, that we're talking about here. So Woodward is cautioning us, I think, in this particular paper and this column to really look at like who's benefiting, you know, follow the money. Where's this push coming from? And is it really what we need to be doing under our constitutional, you know, mandate, which, you know, Idaho has a constitutional obligation to provide a free and fair and equal public education system. And you start carving things out for private religious schools, stuff like that. You may or may not, according to some people's interpretation, be violating our own constitutional prerogatives.
Let's see. We're over time here already. The county commission met. Our Bonner County Commission met and rather quickly adjourned and went into executive session. We don't. And did I have that right, Zach? We don't know what they're talking about.
We're not going to know what that was unless they want to talk about it in an open meeting.
Yeah,
but it sounded a little dire.
Would it be related to the? Who knows?
I would never want to speculate on what that could be. It could be okay. Any number of things, knowing our county.
Okay. we'll not.
We'll keep our ears.
We'll not guess.
Don't worry
on that then. The time now 8:35 and we got to go. Anything you want to preview in the upcoming reader? Now, what's coming up next week, Zach? What are you working on now?
Well, I'm going to have my editorial meeting here in about 20 minutes, but I can tell you we have a council meeting.
Mm-hmm.
We have another commissioner meeting.
Mm-hmm.
We have some wastewater treatment plant, sort of open house stuff going on.
Those are still going on, I think, every Thursday through March.
And if people need to go to those, I mean, mm-hmm. this is a big deal. I mean, it's like one of the biggest things we'll probably do in this town for the next 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
We're obviously going to follow that meeting about mm-hmm. the library consortium on Wednesday and see what happens out of that. So, yeah.
Okay.
And it's just Winter Carnival, you know. So.
Yeah. The Sandpoint Reader on newsstands every Thursday. Zach Hagedon, the editor-in-chief, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
We'll love any sports news that you want to mention in about 15 seconds before we move on.
Yeah, I mean, just real quick, I was part of it last night. Our girls' basketball team, the team I coach, beat Lakeland, and they are advancing to the state tournament. So congratulations to those girls.
Congratulations indeed. Go Bulldogs.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for coming in, Will.
Always fun.
Happy Valentine's Day. That does it for North Idaho News of the Week. Thanks very much, Zach, for a stimulating conversation as ever. And we'll continue now with Otto's Eclectic Mix right here on 88.5 KRFY. This is Panhandle Community Radio.